ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் .org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் பீப்புள், கிராட்டிடியூட் அண்ட் அப்ரிசியேஷன், அண்ட் தென் குருதேவாஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டூல் பார், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
I was reading Hinduism today, this morning, becoming issue, and I ran into an interesting letter from Sanjay Goyal. Abolish misunderstandings. I would like to thank the staff of Hinduism Today for their quality work and dedication to the Hindu community. This magazine's devotion to its purpose and strong commitment to their community has helped Hindus and others around the world understand this great religion. There are so many illusions and misunderstandings that your publication helps to abolish. Without your commendable works, our people would be at a great loss. Thanks. Typical, wonderful letter of praise, right? Doing a great job. Well, the phrase that stood out to me was our people, of course. My people, our people. So it's an interesting phrase. You run into it regularly. Someone says, my people, our people. So I was pondering, well, did Gurudeva ever say that? Did Gurudeva say, I'm doing this for my people? No, he didn't do that, did he? I never heard him use that phrase, my people. So, for David, wouldn't look at it that way. One of the qualities of Gurudeva that was seen at the time of his passing was the wide range of people that wrote in notes of condolence, and the wide range of people that went to the cremation ceremony. The mayor was there, Roselle Bailey was there, so forth. People from varying backgrounds, but Gurudeva had touched each of their lives deeply. So it showed that Gurudeva somehow didn't restrict his influence to my people. He reached out to everyone who he encountered in one way or another. He didn't distinguish between people he were meeting who were his people and the people he were meeting who weren't his people. He didn't distinguish at all. Anyone he contacted in person, over the email, he responded to them as a human being. A human being. Didn't make any distinction. And he even influenced others to broaden their scope, broaden the scope of who are my people. Classic illustration is on the island here, and the culmination of this effort led to the slogan, One Island, Many Peoples, All Kauaians. So even on Kauai, we have this phenomena of my people. The my people to one group means the Hawaiians. My people to another group means the Filipinos. My people to another group means the Japanese, so forth. So Gurudeva put a lot of energy into broadening that concept so that everyone on the island would think of my people as everyone else on the island. We're all Kauaians. We have something in common here. This is our community. So learning from Gurudeva, clearly there needs to be many our peoples, not just one. The community is one of them. Community of Kauaians is a group that Gurudeva taught all of the monks to support. We have a certain number of projects, a certain amount of our energy, a certain amount of our money goes into helping the community. And Gurudeva even spoke on this regularly to Hindu leaders in the U.S., encouraging them to make sure that their Hindu community interrelated with the broader community in which they lived. He said, this is very important. In order to be accepted, you have to give to the community in which you live. You have to feel a part of it, be a part of it, not be isolated from it. He also spoke in terms of our people as being the whole country. That anyone who moved to the United States to live here permanently needed to think of himself as an American, not simply as an Indian or a Sri Lankan or a European, but as an American, to take on that identity. There was an interesting example of this we saw on 60 Minutes a number of years ago. 60 Minutes gives me lots of good examples. It was on the Vietnam Wall. The segment was on the designer of the Vietnam Wall, who is a Chinese woman. And at the time she designed it, she was very young, I think just out of college in her 20s. And so there was some concern about the Vietnam Wall being designed by a Chinese, because the Vietnam War was with Oriental people. So here an Oriental is creating the monument. So there was some resistance. So she was being interviewed and being asked about her background. And she said she grew up in the Midwest, and her phrase was, I'm as American as apple pie. That's how she described herself. I remember that phrase. So she had the right idea. She knew she was American. She wasn't Chinese, never been to China. Her background is Chinese, but she was American. She grew up in America, and she thought of herself as American totally. So the idea here is, if we catch ourselves using the phrase, my people, our people, or we hear someone else use the phrase, think carefully about it. Make sure we're using it in a positive sense, in a good sense, in a sense that's creating unity. Make sure we're not using it in a negative sense, in a sense which is creating disunity and limits. I was reading Hinduism Today this morning, becoming issue, and I ran into an interesting letter from Sanjay Goyal. Abolish misunderstandings. I would like to thank the staff of Hinduism Today for their quality work and dedication to the Hindu community. This magazine's devotion to its purpose and strong commitment to their community has helped Hindus and others around the world understand this great religion. There are so many illusions and misunderstandings that your publication helps to abolish. Without your commendable works, our people would be at a great loss. Thanks. Typical wonderful letter of praise, right? Doing a great job. Well, the phrase that stood out to me was, our people, of course. My people, our people. So it's an interesting phrase. You run into it regularly. Someone says, my people, our people. So I was pondering, well, did Gurudeva ever say that? Did Gurudeva say, I'm doing this for my people? No, he didn't do that, did he? I never heard him use that phrase, my people. So Gurudeva wouldn't look at it that way. One of the qualities of Gurudeva that was seen at the time of his passing was the wide range of people that wrote in notes of condolence, and the wide range of people that went to the cremation ceremony. The mayor was there, Roselle Bailey was there, so forth. People from varying backgrounds, but Gurudeva had touched each of their lives deeply. So it showed that Gurudeva somehow didn't restrict his influence to my people. He reached out to everyone who he encountered in one way or another. He didn't distinguish between people he were meeting who were his people and the people he were meeting who weren't his people. He didn't distinguish at all. Anyone he contacted in person, over the email, he responded to them as a human being. A human being. Didn't make any distinction. And he even influenced others to broaden their scope, broaden the scope of who are my people. Classic illustration is on the island here, and the culmination of this effort led to the slogan, one island, many peoples, all Kauaians. So even on Kauai, we have this phenomena of my people. The my people to one group means the Hawaiians. My people to another group means the Filipinos. My people to another group means the Japanese, so forth. So Gurudeva put a lot of energy into broadening that concept so that everyone on the island would think of my people as everyone else on the island. We're all Kauaians. We have something in common here. This is our community. So learning from Gurudeva, clearly there needs to be many our peoples, not just one. The community is one of them. The community of Kauaians is a group that Gurudeva taught all of the monks to support. We have a certain number of projects, a certain amount of our energy, a certain amount of our money goes into helping the community. And Gurudeva even spoke on this regularly to Hindu leaders in the U.S., encouraging them to make sure that their Hindu community interrelated with the broader community in which they lived. He said, this is very important. In order to be accepted, you have to give to the community in which you live. You have to feel a part of it, be a part of it, not be isolated from it. He also spoke in terms of our people as being the whole country, that anyone who moved to the United States to live here permanently needed to think of himself as an American. not simply as an Indian or a Sri Lankan or a European, but as an American, to take on that identity. There was an interesting example of this we saw on 60 Minutes a number of years ago. 60 Minutes gives me lots of good examples. It was on the Vietnam Wall. The segment was on the designer of the Vietnam Wall, who is a Chinese woman. And at the time she designed it, she was very young, I think just out of college in her 20s. And so there was some concern about the Vietnam Wall being designed by a Chinese, because the Vietnam War was with Oriental people. So here an Oriental is creating the monument. So there was some resistance. So she was being interviewed and being asked about her background. And she said she grew up in the Midwest, and her phrase was, "I'm as American as apple pie." That's how she described herself. I remember that phrase. So she had the right idea. She knew she was American. She wasn't Chinese, never been to China. Her background is Chinese, but she was American. She grew up in America, and she thought of herself as American totally. So the idea here is, if we catch ourselves using the phrase, "my people, our people," or we hear someone else use the phrase, think carefully about it. Make sure we're using it in a positive sense, in a good sense, in a sense that's creating unity. Make sure we're not using it in a negative sense, in a sense which is creating disunity and limits. One of Gurudeva's messages on the last inner search was, he was talking about tools, and the kind of tools he talked was kind of tools he was talking about weren't carpentry tools or software tools or plumbing tools or gardening tools. They were spiritual tools, right? Talking about spiritual tools that he had given us. And the phrase he used was, "I've given you all these tools. You can either put them to use in your life or hang them up on the wall. The choice is yours." So one of the tools he gave us was the yamas and niyamas. And there's a number of beautiful chapters on the yamas and niyamas in Living with Shiva, so it's part of our ongoing study of the Master Course. Every year we end up going through these chapters on the yamas and niyamas. So in Gurudeva's spirit of using the tools, the idea is that we don't necessarily need to learn something new to make additional spiritual progress. We don't have to necessarily acquire a new tool, learn a new technique. We can make additional progress just by utilizing more the tools we've already been given, applying them more to our life, applying them in a new way to our life. So in that sense, the yamas and niyamas are tools, and the suggestion is that when we encounter them each year in going through Living with Shiva, through the daily lessons, to apply them to our life and ask the question, am I really fulfilling this as fully as I could be? And think of it in the subtle aspects, because the grosser aspects are probably well under control. For example, non-injury. None of us go around hitting people. You know, injury isn't a problem in the physical sense. But maybe we're injuring people with our words. Maybe we're joking around too much, and some of that joking can hurt people, particularly if they're in a time of life when they're not feeling secure. Even our thoughts can hurt people. Maybe there's someone at work who we really dislike, and we never tell them that, but we come home and we think about it at length. We're sending all these negative thoughts to somebody on a regular basis. That's injuring someone. So we may not think about these principles in their subtle form, but it's good to, when we read them each year, we can upgrade our performance. Another one which stood out when I was looking through the list was non-stealing. Of course, none of us steal. We don't go into a store and take something and not pay for it. But the last part of non-stealing is defined as entering into debt. And of course, by that, Gurudeva means excessive debt. It's okay to buy a house on a mortgage, enter into debt in that form, but this is entering into debt in the sense that you buy things on credit cards with no real plan how you're going to pay for them. Well, I can afford the monthly payment, minimum payment. It'll only be $50 more. I can buy this new fancy stereo system. It's just $50 more a month. So debt can really be a problem when you lose the ability to pay for things at all. And that happens. Credit is so easy to acquire in our modern world. Credit cards come in the mail every month to people, unsolicited. Here's a new credit card. Have fun. 18% interest, 24% interest. So buying something without the ability to pay for it in the terms you're supposed to pay for it is stealing. So if you're supposed to pay for something in 30 days and you buy it, knowing you can't pay for it in 30 days, you're stealing. So it's a subtle form of stealing, but it is stealing and it has consequences because we get upset when we have to juggle debts and when we make a commitment which we really don't intend to uphold, it's upsetting, upsets our lives, disturbs our lives, can disturb the lives of others in the family as well. So it's something to watch about. So those are a few examples of how we can look for the subtle ways in which we might not be upholding the principles of the Amas in our lives. And if we look through that once a year, it's a worthwhile practice. We don't have to worry about it every day, pull out the list every morning and say, what am I not doing right? We don't want to get that critical of ourselves. But once a year, it's a healthy review. And they're beautifully described in Living with Shiva. Another tool we can use that Gurudeva has given us and try and update once a year is how we're relating to others who we're related to. Children, grandchildren, parents, grandparents. Life is such that our relationships change regularly with all the individuals that we're related to because circumstances change in our lives, circumstances change in their lives, different things happen. So it's not a static situation. It's certainly worthy of review once a year as to how we're doing. And again, the chapters in Living with Shiva, when we come across them, the different family relationships, the husband and wife relationships, the parents to children relationships, parents taking care of their parents relationships, there's chapters on all of this. So again, as we encounter those chapters on a yearly basis, we can reflect and say, is there anything I need to do better? Is there anything I'm omitting? Is there some negative pattern I'm stuck in here in this relationship that really needs to be looked at and improved upon? And we'll probably find something. The situations are always changing. Needs are changing, and we may not have changed how we're responding to them exactly as we need to. So we certainly don't want to leave all these tools on the wall. We want to put them to use. So this morning we looked at a few practical ways where we can utilize the tools we've already been given and make additional spiritual progress without the need to learn anything new or receive a new tool for our tool chest. Om Namah Shivaya. Yesterday, Palani Swami and I attended the Vision Kwai meeting. The mayor was there, and we had a special guest, Elise Bridges, who created the Blue Ribbons, creator of Who Am I Makes a Difference Blue Ribbon, which is what we use in our appreciation verbalizations. So she has lots of material. Who I Am Makes a Difference. The Social Vaccine, Uniting Youth and Community to Make a Difference. She told a lot of wonderful stories, and I thought I'd share one of them on appreciation. She works a lot with schools, so in this story, the teacher simply acknowledged every student in the class, went around one at a time, and expressed how he appreciated them and the qualities in them that he appreciated. And he was very careful to verbalize specific qualities for each student and make them different. So it wasn't just a generalization, oh, you're wonderful or you're smart or something, but to really see the person and acknowledge the student for the wonderful qualities that each one had, the different qualities. And then part of it was a pay forward. This teacher gave each of them two ribbons, and they had to go appreciate one more person and then give that person another ribbon to appreciate someone else. So it was very touching in terms of in the microcosm, you know, how it made everyone feel better about themselves and catalyzed some people to express how much they appreciated another person. Like a son to a father or a father to a son that wouldn't have happened otherwise. So she's busy on the West Side right now, the West Side Coalition Group of businesses, nonprofits, and schools has sponsored her coming to the island, and you'll probably see some write-ups in the Garden Island about their efforts they're working on. I believe it's the Kekaha High School, which needs a lot of help. So getting everyone there, appreciating each other. So we did that, and it made me recall our wonderful write-up from Gurudeva in Living with Shiva. Oh, my glasses. You recall we have two sadhanas given to us. The first one is the sadhana of gratitude. So you're supposed to do that before you do your sadhana of appreciation. So the sadhana of gratitude. The sadhana here is to take out paper and pen and list all the good that has come into your life during the past 5 years. This list will grow as memory is stimulated. Should it not be possible to think of even one good thing, then write the affirmation several times, I am a spiritual being of light, maturing in the ocean of experience. Soon a good memory will come up, followed by more. Feelings of loving appreciation will begin to flow toward those who participated in the good times. Forgiveness then wells up for the bad times. So that's our first sadhana there, and it's a good one to do now and then. Of course, if we do it regularly, we don't have to go back for 5 years. But definitely, you know, if we're feeling, shall we say, a little down, not fully inspired, and looking at the glass and it's half empty rather than half full, it's a good one to do, because then we'll remember all the wonderful events that have taken place in our life and all the people that have done wonderful things for us. This leads to the sadhana of appreciation. The sadhana of appreciation is to approach those you are grateful to and tell them to their face, while looking deep into their eyes, how much you esteem and value them. Be specific. So that's the key. Is you don't want to just say, oh, you're wonderful, but you want to say specific things about the person so they have a sense that you're really deeply feeling what you say. It's just not a surface compliment. So be specific. Find details to share so they know this is not a shallow compliment. Should have just kept reading. Okay. Explain what each one has done to inspire this loving confrontation and convince each in turn that you are sincere. The look of a full smiling face, eyes shining and heart full of love, perhaps followed by a big hug, is convincing enough in itself. Words of appreciation are words people do not often hear. These loving confrontations do not happen nearly often enough among friends and relatives in today's world. Loving appreciation is a magic formula that works both ways. When we commend another, we are automatically uplifted. Oh, here's the story. I didn't know we had the story, Poniswami. It's right here. It's the story that she told from Chicken Soup. Chicken Soup for the Soul, is that what it's called? It's one of the stories in the books is right here about the son. Let's see. It's interesting. Let me get it right. So the story is, and it got published in this book. It was so moving. When she told it, you know, tears came. Everyone, the group, that a young man working for a firm. His employer was rather gruff, and so he got up his courage and decided to appreciate him one day, and so he appreciated him in his brilliance as an inventor. You have so much to teach me in your brilliance as an inventor. And so then he urged the man to pass on that appreciation to another person. So when he went home, he passed it on to his son and told his son how much he loved him and that he was sorry that he didn't say it more often. When he came home, he was preoccupied with work and this and that. But he really loved his son and appreciated him and thought he was a fine person. So then the son opens the drawer, shows the father the gun, says he was going to shoot himself tomorrow, commit suicide. This is a true story. But because he was appreciated by his father, he changed his mind. So, it's wonderful. But it shows, you know, the power of appreciation. And it shows the opposite side, that just not telling people we love them and expressing. That was appreciation and expressing our feelings. We don't express our feelings enough, but people need it. You know, particularly younger people need it, or people who are seeing the glass as half empty. You know, not in a totally positive state of mind. They need appreciation, and it makes all the difference. So it's a real important part of relating to one another in a community. And we have some opportunities coming up to do that. Mother's Day is coming up. This is the day. Do you wonder why Gurudeva put Mother's Day, Father's Day, and Grandparents' Day in our calendar? Even in Malaysia, they're celebrating U.S. Mother's Day. Because it's the natural opportunity to express appreciation. What sometimes it's hard to, you know, find the right time, but this is a time that's been set aside. Okay, it's Mother's Day. What do? Appreciate Mother. So it's very nice, and certainly I think everyone in our congregation has that spirit, even overseas, that it's a great time to verbalize our appreciation, and as Gurudeva says, be specific, you know, try and figure out very specific points, because that really makes someone feel you've thought about it and it has a lot of heartfelt sincerity behind it. And of course, a month after that, we have Father's Day, the man's turn. And then a couple of months after that, we have Grandparents' Day. There was one story I forgot to tell on appreciation, just remembered it, that, you know, appreciation, normally you think, well, appreciation is something all human beings need. But there's a story which shows it even goes beyond that. We have the office cat for the Ekananta Kulam. Certain Kulams have office cats and others don't. So that's their space and they know it. No one else's. So the office cat for the Ekananta Kulam, nickname is Babu. And so not every day, but quite often he'll come into the office at around 4:30 or 5 in the morning, sit in a conspicuous place, and start meowing. And so our Mugaswami was there one morning, and he said, "What's this cat doing?" And I said, "He just wants acknowledgement and appreciation." He does. You know? So you go over to him and acknowledge him and say a few kind words, how wonderful he is and how happy we are to have him as our office cat. And he stops meowing and starts licking himself, and he's very happy. But he wants you to acknowledge him. You know, he's come in. This is his office. He's part of this situation. Please acknowledge me and appreciate me. Oh, it's a real story. It happens almost every other day or so. So even appreciation even extends beyond people, is the idea. Even animals may have a need for appreciation and acknowledgement.